Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From Common Core to you can learn about all the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. And right now, we're in the studio with Bill Henry, now a Baltimore City Councilman who is representing the 4th District and seeking to become a state senator in his battle with Joan Carter Conway. Good to have you in the studio, Bill.
Good to be here, Mark.
Bring your voices to the air, write us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to the Facebook page. So, Bill, there's always this common adage in any politics in Baltimore that it's almost impossible to take on an incumbent. But you chose to do that. Why?
I did. I did for the most basic reason there is. We deserve a better state senator in the 43rd District. I live here, and I have lived here in the 43rd District for the entire time that the current senator has been in office, over 17 years. I found over the years that she is taking positions that are not in line with what her constituents have asked her to do. I'll give you a couple examples.
Okay.
Even before I was on the council as a community activist on the York Road corridor, several of us went to her and asked her to make some changes to Article 2B, the state liquor code, to make liquor regulation more community friendly. There is a very specific practice we asked to be changed. Right now, when someone tries to transfer the ownership of a liquor license for an existing store or restaurant, but usually the problem is packaged goods stores, whenever that transfer hearing is held, no matter how chronic of a problem that store has been to the surrounding community, no matter how many calls for service to the police or how many citations for trash and litter, no matter how many complaints about loitering there are for this place over multiple years and multiple owners, the only information that the liquor board in Baltimore City is allowed to look at when having the transfer hearing is the character of the applicant. So unless the person coming in can be proven to have been bad at running a place somewhere else, there is nothing that the liquor board is allowed to hear from the community. If that were the case everywhere, it would be one thing that it was hard for us to get her to let us look at the character of the establishment. Because sometimes it's the business itself is the problem. The way it's set up is just a bad business model that's going to be community unfriendly. And it doesn't matter whether it's Mr. John or Mr. Smith or Mr. Jones, whoever it is over the years, they're all running it the same way, and it's always bad for the community. But there are other subdivisions around the state that have that power. Their liquor boards are allowed to look at the character of the establishment. And we've asked her multiple times. I actually, since I've been in the council, have passed a resolution. The entire city council twice has asked the General Assembly delegation to introduce and pass legislation giving our liquor board this power. Now, when Senator Conway has been confronted with this, her response has been that, well, she doesn't control the whole delegation. And so something like this would have to be agreed to by everyone in the delegation, and everyone in the delegation is not for it. And so that's why it didn't happen. But my complaint is she didn't even introduce it. She didn't even try. If one of my neighborhood associations comes to me as their city council person and says, we'd like you to put in such and such a bill, I can say to them, well, I don't think there's going to be much chance that that's going to pass because nobody else in the city has this problem, so I'm not going to have any support. But if they say, we don't care, we want you to try and we'll help, I put it in. It may lose 1-14, but if my people ask me to try to do something, I try to do it.
So, Bill, there's a number of things here that we had an email that came in the other day and looking for you to come on. And after we had Joan Carter Conway, who had a number of calls and emails during the course of the conversation we had with her, Joanne actually asks a question here, wanting to know about the votes that Senator Conway has made in the state Senate or in the committee she ran, I think she's talking about, where fracking was not allowed to come out, where she stood with the people who make pesticides and arsenic, and has, what is she saying here? And has as well fought against people's right to keep their homes and mortgages. Do you think she has been bought out by the banks, the chemical industry, and all the people who have power and money to keep her in office?
Well, actually, it sounds like Joanne's already made that point pretty clear. It's not for me to say that she's been bought out by any particular set of special interests, but all the campaign finance reports are online. I encourage anybody who's curious to see why at the beginning of this campaign she had a 12-to-1 fundraising advantage over me. If you got $100,000 in the bank, you can go online and you can see where she's getting that money from. But there is one point I would like to make is that
campaigning can make you hoarse.
Yeah, as you can hear, I've been doing a lot of talking. One of the issues that was raised when she was on your show earlier this week that I thought was interesting because she listed part of the issue. She pointed out that she has a very high score on her environmental scorecard.
She did say that. Yeah. Okay.
But then when Kara called in and asked about the Poultry Fair Care Act and why it was never brought to a vote, the senator said, "You don't want to have a history of a bill dying in committee." Now, I thought that that was a very interesting thing for her to say because the reason a senator like ours would not want to have that kind of history is because if it comes up for a vote, she has to vote on it one way or the other. And when she votes in a way that is not in keeping with what the environmentalists believe would be the proper course of behavior, then it counts against her on her scorecard. Anything that she doesn't want to vote yes on, she just has to not hold a vote on it. And it won't count against her for scoring purposes. And we end up with a less well-regulated state in terms of pollution.
One of the questions that pushed here is that Baltimore is losing population, that we are losing representation in the state Senate and the House of Delegates. We are losing the power of the chairmanships that people have. She has one of those chairmanships. That's critical to the future of the city and to keeping some power, semblance of power in the Baltimore region.
Yeah, and we've heard that argument before. We heard that argument when Lisa Gladden ran against Barbara Hoffman that, oh, my goodness, we can't have this. Barbara Hoffman is the chair of a powerful financial committee, and if we do that, it'll be this horrible blow for Baltimore. Well, we did that. We got a great new senator in Senator Lisa Gladden, and Baltimore has continued. And you know what happened? When we lost Barbara Hoffman, we gained a senator somewhere else in another district, such as now we have Joan Carter Conway. If we lose Joan Carter Conway, and frankly for the citizens of the 43rd District, I don't think that will be much of a loss. Baltimore won't necessarily lose out on power if Senate President Mike Miller decides to make some other senator from Baltimore City a chair.
So have you had any debates?
We have not had any formal, like what you and I probably think of as a debate.
We attempted to have a debate between the two of you on this program, on the station, with a co-host of mine, me and Anthony McCarthy, but we couldn't get that to happen. Not because the senator was not willing to have it happen.
Yeah, and I think that is because there have been too many instances where we have been at the same place at the same time speaking, and if I get a chance to respond to the things she says, it doesn't tend to go well for her with the audience.
When it comes down to kind of critical issues in the district, again, I heard what you said about the liquor board, and that's always been a controversial issue in the state of Maryland with liquor boards and state senators, no matter who the state senator is. It's never been a pretty picture, I think, in our city or state. The critical issues, you've talked, I know, before about fracking and some of the issues. Some people say, well, that's not directly related to our district, so what about our district?
Well, let me talk about youth development and public safety. I am and have been publicly against the state's youth jail project. I have not heard our senator make such a commitment. I think it's horrifying that the state would like to spend somewhere between $70 and $100 million building a youth jail for 120 kids that we didn't do right by in the first place, such that they've gone off the right path. That money would be so much better and more effectively spent if it were being used to rehab rec centers across Baltimore City. One of the reasons why the administration has been pushing so hard to close rec centers across Baltimore is because there aren't the capital funds needed to restore them to truly safe and marketable effectiveness. And $70 million could be would be an incredible opportunity to restore and repair rec centers across this entire city and give kids something safe and productive to be doing other than being on the streets where they can get in trouble.
So, I mean, what can you do as senator with that? I mean, so these people say, okay, with the youth jail, there was a separate pot of money. It was there for construction, youth jail. How does that fit into what really happened in Baltimore, and what could you do about it anyway if you were the Senate?
Well, I mean, not to sound naive, but money is money. If we don't spend $70 million on a youth jail, but that $70 million was in the budget and revenue had been found to provide it for that purpose, then that money is available. Now, the political will needs to be mustered to say, rather than spending this money on holding on to a couple kids who've gone bad, we'd rather spend that money on keeping thousands of kids on the right path. Really, I'm one of the reasons I want to do this job is because I want to go down to Annapolis and I want to look suburban legislators in the eye, and I want to have them tell me to my face, we would rather spend our tax money putting a couple of your kids in jail than helping all of them have a safer, more productive life.
It would be a huge step. I mean, I'm curious where you think politically this takes you, given as we start the conversation out, given the difficulty it is to unseat a sitting senator or a sitting councilman. If someone's running against you for city council, it would be very difficult. We have a tendency in this town to keep things going, though you can sense in many ways, I think, in this campaign, at least many of us are from our interviews and just ears to the street, that there's an upheaval. Somebody's bubbling from the bottom.
If I look around the city at the remaining senators in the delegation, I look at Senator McFadden, I look at Senator Pugh, I look at Senator Gladden, I look at Senator Ferguson, and I see a delegation where half of those members beat incumbent senators to get the jobs that they hold.
And going back to some of the issues, I mean, I mentioned fracking, but where's the difference between you and Senator Conway in issues like fracking and pesticides and the stuff that – because she chairs that committee.
Yeah.
You won't chair that committee if you're in.
No.
You won't be chairing any committee.
No.
But you'll be on a committee.
I will.
So.
Well, I mean, and the fracking issue, I won't say candidly because we're on the air, but it was the fracking issue that really first got me thinking about
really? This.
Because, as I said before, I believe that going to community meetings is a big part of being a representative and a legislator. I go to all the community association meetings in my district. For the ones where they meet at the exact same time, sure, you're on a staggered schedule. But it's doable to go to all of the meetings. And the year that the environmental community was making a big push on the fracking moratorium, there was an organization that was also taking a very grassroots approach to getting support. And they were going to as many community meetings as they could in Senator Conway's district, explaining the issue and asking people to reach out to the senator and support the moratorium. And I saw this happen. I saw the staff of the nonprofits speaking at the community meetings. I saw the people in those community meetings resonate. I saw that the message resonated with them. In many cases, I watched them fill out little postcards saying, please, bring this issue up to a vote and support the fracking moratorium. I know from the conversations I had with people in my office that they called the senator's office and asked her to support this. So I watched this grassroots campaign mobilize the constituents of the 43rd District to reach out to Senator Conway and ask her to support the fracking moratorium. And then I watched her kill that bill in her own committee over the requests of her own constituents for what I can only assume are special interests.
So when the email came in, when Senator Conway was here, John Carter Conway was here, about the poultry tax, the idea that you should charge X dollar, X percent for every chicken owned by a large producer, Purdue, Tyson, whoever that might be, Mount Air. We got her response. What would yours have been if you had been there?
My response would be that on a moral level, it's reprehensible for these big, essentially agribusiness companies to push all the liability off onto the little individual farms that they're contracting with. The big poultry companies should take responsibility for the long-term and short-term effects of what the poultry business is doing to the Chesapeake Bay.
There are a lot of issues going to be facing the state coming up in the next session or the next 4 years for whoever is the state senator in this district. One of those will be whether somebody like Heather Mazier is governor, whether it's Attorney General Gansler, whether it's Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. As the president of the state Senate, who will be your leader in the state Senate, Mike Miller said to me during the Annapolis summit, he said that the legalization of marijuana will not pass, but it may pass, and it may pass later. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But that was interesting. He made that comment, and the governor came on talking about he is unequivocally opposed to it, as was the speaker at that moment. And then you have this as an issue in the gubernatorial race because Heather Mazier has brought up the idea that we should legalize it, tax it, and use the money for education and take that $700 million and use it for whatever, $170 million, I think she said. What's your position on legalization of marijuana?
My position is that I think it's coming, and it's just a question of it's a question of how quickly. I think that the social barometer, I guess we'll call it, is moving in the same way that we saw civil marriage, slowly but inexorably move to the point where most people accept that this is the right way to address this issue. Criminalizing marijuana is ridiculous. The question is going to be, do we jump straight to legalizing and regulating and taxing it and using it as a revenue source? Do we continue to make the baby steps of greater and greater decriminalization? At some point, do we look and see whether or not we want to address it as a public health issue? I'm okay with the idea of legalizing and taxing marijuana. I would not be in a hurry to do it right away in the coming session because since we have the advantage of Colorado and Washington having already gone ahead and done it in front of us, we may as well watch them for a little while and gather some data and make sure that when we do our program, it is as effective as possible and that we don't recreate any mistakes that they did and then had to go back and correct a year or two later.
We're sitting here talking with Bill Henry. Bill Henry, of course, is a 4th District City Councilman seeking to become the 43rd State Senator for the 43rd District here in Baltimore City. So one of the issues that we talked about, because we've raised on this show a lot over the years, not because it was part of the campaign or because your bill in the City Council or even directly because Joan Carter Conway opposed the bill in the state Senate. We covered it because of the mortgage crisis in America, what Richmond, California was trying to do with eminent domain. One of the things that Senator Conway said when I asked the question about why she pushed and then had a bill passed that would deny municipalities the right to seize by eminent domain houses at market rate from banks so people could keep their homes in a complex way. She says, I'm opposed to eminent domain was her response. But you have a very opposite position. I want to hear what the logic of your position is. I was trying to listen to the logic of her position.
Well, the logic of her position suffered from the fact that she either doesn't actually really understand how it works, or possibly worse, she understands how it works and purposefully misstates it so as to scare people. Local principal reduction does not, I repeat, does not involve using eminent domain to take houses. The house is never taken in local principal reduction. The idea is that the city would condemn the mortgage on the house, and by condemning the mortgage at the current market rate for the house, give the bank or the current mortgage holder what the house is worth right now, and let the owners of the house who live there refinance that mortgage at the current rate. So if you're underwater with your mortgage and your mortgage is $100,000 more than your house is actually worth, and the same economic collapse that resulted in the loss of value in your house also resulted in the loss of value of your income, you're working a different, lower-paying job, maybe both you and your spouse were working previously, but now only one of you is. The same things that affect the value of the house affect people's ability to pay those mortgages. And so the idea behind local principal reduction is the banks, which were responsible for the economic collapse, should be accepting responsibility for that by voluntarily reducing the principal of the mortgages. And it starts with trying to get them to voluntarily negotiate and reduce the principal of the mortgages. If they will not voluntarily do so, what Richmond, California has proposed, and this is another thing that either the senator doesn't understand or purposefully misstates, Richmond, California is proposing to do this local principal reduction program. They have not done it. They have not actually taken a house yet. This is a proposal, and because they are proposing doing this, and they reached out to progressive legislators all around the country and said, we think that this is something that will be helpful, not just here, but in other places. Can we get a little bit of support nationwide because the financial industry is coming down on us like a ton of bricks? So earlier this spring, I put the resolution in at the end of last fall. Earlier this spring, we had a hearing in the city council for my resolution, which was just a non-binding resolution of support for Richmond, California. I said, you know what, Richmond? You're trying to find a way to help people deal with being underwater, help reduce the foreclosure explosion across the country, help contest the fact that underwater mortgages lead to foreclosures, which lead to vacant, blighted houses in a community, which leads to a reduction in the tax base, which hits the city where it hurts. You're trying to do something. Go ahead. Good job on you. You know, thank you for trying. 95% of the resolution was just support to Richmond in what they're trying to accomplish. Little one line at the end saying, and, you know, how about if the Baltimore Housing looks at what local principal reduction could accomplish here in Baltimore? Just look at it. Just study the issue. We had a hearing, and it was a great hearing. We had a lot of people come in and talk about how Richmond's program will work or would work. We had people who opposed it come in and speak about what they felt were the dangers of starting such a practice. We had a good discussion about it. While we were up here in Baltimore discussing it like adults, the senator from our district was quietly down in Annapolis putting in a bill to make this practice illegal in the state of Maryland, even before any subdivision in the state had actually put in a bill to try to do it. She was already trying to make it illegal ever in the state of Maryland. Now, that bill was eventually amended so that it became just for 2 years and includes a study by the State Department of Housing and Community Development, but The bill she introduced was a straight-up moratorium, which I find especially entertaining considering she wouldn't support a moratorium on fracking, which her own constituents were asking for, but she would support a moratorium on local principal reductions, which only special interests were asking for.
So another question, Bill Henry. I close out here before we have to leave. One of the questions I was pushing Senator Conway on was, you're chairman of the committee. That's, I think that is important in Annapolis. That has a lot of power and strength to it. But what is bringing home the bacon mean to you? What are the issues that you will deal with as state senator that will directly affect the lives of people in the 43rd district?
Well, liquor regulation, making it more community friendly, will affect a lot of people in the 43rd district. I'm also looking at responsible banking practices.
What does that mean?
Well, I'll give you an example. We talk a lot about food deserts. That is an issue which has risen to the higher level of consciousness publicly. Most people are surprised when I point out to them that the M&T Bank at the corner of York and Belvedere is the only bank branch on York Road or Greenmount Avenue in the city of Baltimore.
Wow.
We are starting to realize that we have banking deserts also. But at the same time, banks are still making money off of working with government. And I think that the banks that have relationships with local and state government and profit off of those relationships should be banks that are doing the most in the communities. I think that we should be trying to shift more of our property tax burden onto slumlords and investors and have a split tax rate so that we can have a higher property tax on vacant buildings, encourage people or more accurately, discourage people from just holding them and land banking them. One of the things that we are finding with the foreclosure issue is that as the buildings sit there and are vacant and bring down the values of the houses around them, it creates a continued incentive for the banks not to hurry up and do something with them.
So, Bill, let me ask you this, Bill Henry. A closing thought that I did for Senator Conway and everybody else that comes on this program, a closing comment from you before we have to wrap up.
Our senator said earlier this spring at a Ramblewood meeting, I believe it was, she said, quote, "So if you expect me to be at every meeting, I won't. I am not a city council person. I am a state legislator, the resident senator for the 43rd. With my leadership positions, I will be in Oklahoma, I will be in San Antonio, I will be in Western Maryland, I will be on the Eastern Shore." That is wonderful for Joan Carter Conway. That is not so wonderful for the citizens of the 43rd District. The citizens of the 43rd District need a state senator who's going to be here listening to what we want the state senator to be doing, and then going to Annapolis and accurately representing their ideas with whatever power they can and have.
City Councilman Bill Henry, good to have you here. Good luck in the campaign trail to become state senator. We'll see what happens on Tuesday, and we'll talk about it on Wednesday.
Thank you, Mark.
Good to have you here. Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. To hear the show again, podcast past shows, and find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And you can also listen to and download our podcast on iTunes. For Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.